A couple people might show up, but I'm going to start anyway. And I'm divided now because I wasn't sure. Well, today will I talk about what the announced subject was, which I presume is partly why Martin M is here, because it was inspired by his email. But then also I had an email from Jeff yesterday about an unrelated subject, and I emailed Jeff to say, well, we could talk about that too, because that's pretty interesting. So now I'm not sure which fork in the road to take. Anyone have any strong feelings either way?
I don't mind at all. Whatever arises.
Well, Jeff M is coming to the men's thing tonight, so... So let's stick to the program for now, and we'll see where it goes. So, do you want to recap what you said in the email for Jeff and the listeners' benefit, Martin, or do you want me to?
I said a few things. I think the essence was having some hope of a reaction to the evil that's going on, and a reaction of the same magnitude that could result in some kind of awakening, uprising, revolution, you know, something that really just pushes back and gives us the opposite of the world that we're being pushed towards.
Mm. Yeah, well, that was certainly what I focused on. I mean, there were other things in the email as well, but obviously that was what I focused on in my responses, and also that inspired it as a subject for today. Because I have been hearing this from here and there from people, and I have to be careful because I possibly have a knee-jerk reaction to any kind of optimistic statements. So I'm not going to put false in front, because then I would be biased in my own favor. Obviously, if I think it's false optimism, then I have a reaction against it. But I'm saying I might just have a reaction against optimism and assume it's false because of something in me. And what comes to mind there just very spontaneously is that my family was involved in peace protests and even instrumental in creating the template for peaceful protests and stuff with the CND movement. And I find all that very fishy, as people probably know. Anyway, that's just a bit of personal background. And my response to Martin in the email was, well, it was very condensed because it's email, and I don't want to spend too much time on email if I can help it. But it was, well, there were two things. One is, well, what would this look like? Because if we're talking about a system that is visibly, manifestly malevolent now in 2021. I mean, it always was manifestly malevolent, but now it's visibly so. That billions of people are dependent on all of the institutions and the structures of energy sources, you know, I mean, the electricity, the water, all of these different things, they're all inextricably intertwined. So we have this thing called the system. Ted Kaczynski just came to mind then. He keeps kind of nagging away at the periphery of my consciousness because I feel I'm probably going to have to read that damn manifesto one of these days. So there's that. So what would it look like? Because there seems to be an assumption, maybe particularly among leftists, I don't know what used to be leftists, that, and I hear about this from, for example, somebody my wife knows who believes that if you could just get all the white people out of power and put brown people into power, then everything would be fine, right? Other people have the view, if you could just get rid of all the men and put women in power, everything would be fine. I mean, Martin's smiling, that's obviously very naive to his mind as it is to mine. And that's obviously naive because brown people aren't better than white people and women aren't better than men, and anyone should know that. But the other way in which it's naive, I think, is that it's a bit like the gospel saying you don't want to put new wine in old bottles, that you can take all of the different individual Machiavellian agents of malevolence out of the system. But then if you just replace them with the people you want, they'll still have to adapt to the system that they're taking over, and they might think that they're trying to transform it and redirect it, but it's a juggernaut, and in my view, it's far more likely that they get taken over by the system that they're trying to reform. So I can't actually envision what it would look like, that kind of uprising and rebellion or resistance or revolt, besides complete chaos. I can't see any way that it could even be a violent, but at least, sufficiently abbreviated transition to not enter into total chaos and darkness, by which somehow the world of McDonald's and Starbucks and the CIA and the police state and the military and the White House and could somehow be adapted by this uprising. And last point, which I also put in the email, although as I say, my email was much more condensed, that it seems to me, by the same token, perhaps, that those who really were able and willing and ready to step up in that way and start taking over the power would be Mexican drug cartels, for example. We know they're waiting in the wings. As soon as things start collapsing, getting destabilized, they're all ready. They're armed, they're dangerous, they're organized. They move right in like Mad Max. Where, as opposed to apparently millions of people I hear who are going out and waving signs saying no to this, well, yes, they've become aware enough to get out and wave signs around, and maybe a little bit of organization in terms of homeschooling and who knows what else. I'm sure there's quite a lot more going on, and I'm not meaning to be dismissive of this. I think it's very important and essential that people, we do find alternate networks in order to transition out of society. But I don't see that as having any transformative effect on society, because I just can't see how that would work. And I don't see any way to avoid either the promised or the apparent, it is promised, but the apparently unfolding crackdown of society into a martial state through resistance, because resistance was going to make that kind of apparatus stronger, or the alternate, I would say perhaps the better option, is the collapse, which could happen as a result of resistance. That's possible. My view, and I'm trying to sum it up quickly because I want to hear what Martin has to say, is that, and I thought of the analogy of Jonestown recently. Like, it came out, it was quoted by a couple of people, including Dave, and they were, not so much Dave, but this other person had the mainstream view of Jonestown, so they were completely wrong. They were just thinking a whole bunch of people just drank the Kool-Aid and died because they'd been brainwashed. Well, that was part of the attempt of the experiment of the CIA and co, I think, to see, how effectively they could get people to self-euthanize and other things. That would kind of be the ultimate test of how brainwashed people are. But according to the facts, the documentation, all the rest of it, a lot of people, possibly even the majority, refused. And so then they were injected, whether they were held down by force, I'm not too sure, but definitely there were needle marks, and they died by lethal injection. And a whole bunch of others ran into the jungle to get away, and they had to be chased and rounded up by armed guards and machine gunned. And this is why there was a discrepancy in the body count. When it was first announced, there were only 300 dead, and then a couple of days later there was 700 dead, and they explained it by saying that, well, bodies were hidden under bodies. So in other words, 300 bodies had hidden 400 bodies. In other words, mainstream media bullshit as usual, but people bought it. So anyway, but the Jonestown analogy being that, it's only the start of, as an analogy, because I want to take it further, but that what we're seeing in society now is, people will voluntarily, willingly take a gene manipulating or a gene hacking injection disguised as a vaccine, called a vaccine, even though there's enough information out there and even their just common sense is telling them, don't do it. So in a certain sense, not to the extent of Jonestown, they are self-euthanizing. They are volunteering for something that may kill them out of a slavish adherence to the propaganda and the institution that they're subservient to. But then there are people who say no, and now they're being mandated, they're being forced to take the injection, more coerced anyway. So far, I haven't heard cases of actual physical force. And then what might the next step be if people actually rebel and revolt and or try to escape society, which is what I'm doing, they might be hunted down and shot, literally or figuratively. And so, and the last thing is the question that I have is, what if an uprising, this is in my response to Martin, what seems to me it's likely to be part of the plan, because any corporate super state intelligence military network that is attempting to coerce its population into slavery and or death, presumably is going to factor in some sort of resistance. So at the very least, they'll be prepared for it, but also quite possibly and quite likely, and this seems to be observable in the US, it's factored in not just in the sense of they can contain it, but they can direct it. So they want to engineer destabilization, and if they want to grease the wheels of a martial state takeover, coup, military coup, whatever we're going to call it. It's a bit blurry now because a lot of the people in the military seem to be against some of these policies. But anyway, maybe it'll be robots and stuff rather than human military. But whatever that is, the use of tactical force on a mass scale, then generating an uprising can be a way to do that. So my sense is that There's a machinery of death currently that's been dispatched and has gone into overdrive, or it's moving into overdrive, and it has many different methods and strategies to bring about mass death. And the vaccine is just the first wave. There's John H. It's all guys today. And that we're going to see many, many more ways in which people are being coerced into suicide by state, essentially. Therefore, since that's the viewpoint I have, I can't see an awakening of this sort, like a socio-political awakening, as anything but complementary with that kind of unfolding agenda. But anyway, I'm interested to hear the alternate perspectives. So if Martin wants to respond, oh, here comes Joe. Everybody's coming late and it's all guys, which is really unusual because it's usually all women, and if there's only one of them, but it's more consistently women who've been coming to these meetings. And today it's all guys, and today's the day, Tuesday, of the guy dance. So something is in the air. Anyway, did anyone want to respond to that?
I would say I think everything you said is possible, and some of it's even likely, but we're in such bizarre territory that we can't really say anything for sure. What they have done, they have squeezed the vice so tightly that they have they've fucked with people who just wanted to be left alone. They had no interest in their systems. They had no interest in their disgusting politicians or their. We just wanted to be left alone. We held them in contempt. We knew what they were like. We said, okay, you do your own filthy thing and just leave us to, do our thing. And they were not satisfied with that. They couldn't leave it there. They couldn't be satisfied with 99% of the wealth and power. They had to have 100%. And maybe that was a mistake because they have fucked with something that should not be fucked with, in my opinion. I can feel the level of righteous rage within me, and I'm not unique. There must be millions of people like me who just wanted to be left alone, and now we're going to have to do something about it. Now we have a collective group of people who are not going to accept, you know, this is a fight to the death, as far as I can see. We're not going to accept what they're presenting. And I think as they try and squeeze down on us, other people are going to see what's happening and think, well, that's not right. That's extreme. What's going on here? I think there's a possibility of a kind of, you know, something emergent developing, like an emergent intelligence. You see, you don't know what could arise. And that's the thing. We don't know what could arise. This is new territory. We don't know what could arise. This could be, you know, the pressure that makes the diamond. And from that pressure, something great could come. It could be hopium, but something could come. You know, we're in uncharted territory. So that's one thing I would say about that. Also, very simply, I don't think we can afford just to take a black pill. To what extent is there some kind of choice involved here? You know, we can get into any kind of quantum bullshit you want, but who knows the extent to which maybe we are creating this on some level, and maybe we just have to visualize the win and go for that rather than fearing. Because these people want us terrified. They want us scared, submissive. They want us cowering in front of screens with our masks on. And if we just reject that, that's half the battle. So we're not going to be scared. You do your thing, and we'll see what we can come up with as a counter response. But just to bow in front of what their obvious might, I don't think we can afford to do that. We have to visualize something better, and we can't always be on playing defense. We have to kind of do our own thing and not just be planning for the very worst, because this, you know, maybe it's coming, but you know, maybe we can do something about it. And maybe being positive and having our own ideas about the future, maybe that could be a real factor.
Right. Well, I hadn't heard of the black pill before. I've heard of hopium, although not often. Well, I agree with one part, with Martin was saying about we may be getting squeezed into some really unseen, unimagined outcome that is positive. I'm paraphrasing. I absolutely agree with that. However, I don't think it's got anything to do with society or the world. I think, it's a bit tricky here, but even our physical survival, I'll just say it. So that's where the difference. And Martin, you were saying that see if I can remember what it was, but it was something about not playing into their hands and not just reacting to what they're doing. But at the same time, talking about fighting the power. And to me, there's two things. One is that, never mind the first one. The second one is that to me, seeing that this is the end of the world, whatever we're going to call it, and the outcome's completely black at a social level, and we've got to prepare for the worst possible scenario. To me, all of that is a positive outlook. Because to me, if we're being pushed into two avenues, essentially, which is really one avenue, first of all, back to nature, back to the land, back to just physical observance of the laws of matter and of nature, and a realignment of our consciousness with the natural law as opposed to the societal one. That's number one. And then number two, which is inseparable from that, is getting right with God, sorting out our relationship to our souls and to our spirit and to the creator. Right? None of this quantum bullshit, as you said. We don't create our own reality. And actually, you know, God does. And God can do it through us, absolutely. But yeah, I'm aware it's risky and talk deep religious stuff. But that is my context, just to be clear. If anyone was unclear about that, that's the lens through which I see all of this. So I don't see the idea that the game is rigged and the house always wins as a bad thing. I just see that's the way it is. You know, Satan is the prince of this world. And since we've got to negotiate with Satan to get back to God in a certain sense, but without falling for any of the tricks. And yesterday I was talking to Charles Upton for the podcast, and he said that one of the one of the things he's noticed about human beings who are infiltrated and taken over by demonic entities or jinn, is in his version, because you know, he's Muslim, is that they want to avoid Armageddon, which is Judgment Day. And that's even in the New Age literature. Hey, we can just reset this reality. We don't have to stay stuck in the old Christian myth script. We can preempt and avoid Armageddon. We can have a better outcome. But the thing is, Armageddon is Judgment Day, and that's when everything gets sorted out and straightened out. So, and on a socio-political scale, the emergence of the machine malevolence that is probably deeply, you know, before it was machines, it was inorganic in some much more ancient way, or romantic or demonic, whatever you want to call that, the emergence into tangible and undeniable reality, I would say, is a good thing. But not if we get triggered into some kind of futile, reactive resistance mode. Because I think that that's a trap. I do think that's a trap. I'm curious, Jeff looks busy. I'm curious what Jeff has to say, because I think Jeff, in a certain sense, is kind of somewhere between Martin and I, because I think I know that Jeff has some of the same feelings that Martin's expressed, but I also think he's probably closer to my kind of paranoid optimism, I'm going to call it that. Anyway, what do you think, Jeff?
Well, first of all, yeah, I 100% agree with what Martin said. They are awakening something that No, what's that? Isn't that an ancient poem from which author? The Saxon, and then anyway, sorry, it's early here. Something had to change in this society, because the path this society has been on has been a retreat from living life to participating in a virtual or delegated manner. People can't change a fucking tire anymore on their car. And I'm talking men, not just women. So how are we expected to defend ourselves against a militarized, highly coordinated intelligence operation bent on creating a society meant for the lucky few who are part of the big club, as Carlin put it, when they're battling people who basically just know how to work a remote control or, an Xbox game controller. My son was telling me last night how he's been trying to raise chickens for the first time. He was raised in a typical suburban lifestyle. We were following a path that was laid out that we thought, if we do the right things, if we go to work, if we work hard, nose to the grindstone, like that phrase from yesterday, Jason, where it come from. But if we, do right and try not to steal, don't hurt anybody, then you'd be rewarded with a reasonably comfortable life, barring any other sort of blah, 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 blah. And that whole thing has been proven to be such an illusion, obviously. But anyway, so my son's now trying to create a more independent, homesteaded type of life. He's up in rural New Hampshire, raising chickens. And here he told the story already of how a bear has attacked his chicken coop. Well, last night, he told me how now a bobcat has joined the group. So now he's tracking bobcats into the woods. So, that's not exactly a suburban lifestyle that he's been used to, but God bless him. He's taking it on and he's carrying now when he's going into the woods. And like my wife was saying, she was walking out to work. She's like, oh, I guess Adeline, my granddaughter, who's three, I guess she's got to learn how to shoot a rifle pretty soon, huh? And, it sounds crazy, but it's also highly exciting. It's exciting to live life and not just view it. And, we're stuck with this interaction here. I'd much rather be sitting in a room with you fellas right now discussing this. The energy would be so different, so charged, and so much more intense. But I know, you have to make do with what you have. But I think that's part of the key is battling against those who would just basically immerse us in this meta nightmare dystopian future where we all just are plugged in like the metaphor for the Matrix and we're just basically batteries. And they want to take away our understanding of the visceral experience of living, the pain, the heartache, the joy, the triumph, the confusion, the problem solving, all those things that get the blood flowing, the adrenaline going. That's what they want to steal from us, in my opinion. That's the human energy force, Jason, as I understand it. At least it's a significant part of it. And I'm trying to find out where I can fit into this new dynamic. Do I stay as the gray man within my little suburban community and just become a sniper? Do I join a cartel and become a lieutenant in, Don Pablo's, northern faction of the army? I don't know what I got to do. I have no idea what I'm going to do. So all I do is just the fundamentals. I keep trying to keep my skills up. I keep trying to stay in reasonable shape. I try to eat right. I try to be nice to people. I try to learn. I'm saving seeds this year for the first time. I'm actually saving seeds, even though I can still buy seeds. There's going to be a day when I can't get them. So I'm learning how to harvest them. That was exciting. So I haven't answered your point, I don't think, Jason. But what I'm trying to say is when I discovered your work, you were still doing the liminalist. And I really wasn't familiar with that term. And boy, oh boy. Talk about liminal living right now. It's exhausting though to live with one foot in traditional life and one foot trying to figure out the next step to take once this whole thing really comes crashing down, which is obviously, imminent.
Right. Well, I'm still doing a liminalist bio, Jeff. Got one coming up this week. But yeah, there's only three more to go. So while speaking of things, Jeff did bring up the liminalist position. I think it's relevant here today because clearly, I mean, I hope it's clear, I'm not advocating some sort of passive acquiescence to the system, nor am I advocating ignoring what's going on. You can't ignore it, as Martin pointed out. It's coming for us now. But for those of us, like myself being the one I know best here, who has been aware of and really been probing into the Cthulian superstate or superculture that we're partly formed by, we're deformed by, it's not really that different. The feeling of it coming for you and the feeling of it coming for you in subtler ways. Like it was always coming for us. Like we didn't even make it through the period of gestation in the womb without it getting its tentacles in us. We didn't even have a clean conception because of how our parents were infiltrated by this thing, this system. So I'm not, ignoring it is not an option, except unless you're taking the suicide route. But as I said, I don't want to repeat myself, and there's hammering in the background now distracting me, but active resistance, I don't even want to invite arguments for it, because I just don't think there's any point. I don't know how anyone could think that active resistance is going to be effective. I mean, Jeff in his email to me was even saying, why the hell are you trying to contact Joe Rogan? He's probably a lifetime actor. It's futile. Well, I kind of agree, but I think there's a certain symbolic meaning and a potential benefit or gain in sort of metaphorical actions. But anyway, I didn't bring it up for that reason. I brought it up for the reason that if Jeff thinks that, you know, even trying to get on the Joe Rogan podcast is futile, then I imagine he's not going to advocate resisting the New World Order. I think you might want to respond to that.
Well, I wasn't trying to, again, black pills, as Martin brought up the term. I'm not trying to say all is lost. What's the point of doing anything? Let's just, you know, surrender or what have you like that. Or let's not try to get our word out there. As you know, I was highly influenced by the work of Alan Watt. And I discovered him through his one appearance on Coast to Coast with George Nouri, which... Sorry about that. So I discovered Alan through Coast to Coast, his one appearance on there back in 2006. And he knew what that show was all about. He had made fun of the Art Bell show prior to that. He knew, though, that it was important to find a way to get his voice out to a larger audience. And it worked, and it had an impact on me. So I understand what you're trying to do. I don't like Rogan. I really just don't like him at all. I think he's a terrible comic.
Yeah, well, I don't like Russell Brand either. So that's how I felt about Dave doing it. So, you know, we all have to constantly recalibrate our sense maybe of what's possible, which is maybe Martin's point, but also, you know, what's strategically meaningful, what's worthwhile. So anyway, it was a good point. A relevant point that you found Alan Watt through Coast to Coast, which you know is a shit show. People have found me through Sean Atwood or Skeptico, which I think is the shit shows.
Right, I did, yeah.
Right? You did. Skeptico, right. So then it's reaching people and bringing people together is meaningful. We can probably all agree about that. But what we're discussing today is, you know, what do we do when we get together, and what's the plan, or what's the goal? I mean, this was in Jeff's email. He doesn't really quite understand what the point is of all this. Anyway, I didn't finish the point. I was made about the middle way, the liminal way. So the liminal way, the middle way between passive ignoring of the evil and acquiescence to it and active resistance to it is, and I have to pause because I've said this so many different ways, so many different occasions, that I don't want to just fall back on old wisdoms, but to engage with it actively and creatively and imaginatively and spontaneously on our own terms. And that means, to me anyway, let's say that begins with a suspension of judgment around what the nature of the malevolence is. We can say it's malevolent in the sense we can say a cancer is malign, I guess. They say malign is the opposite of benign. It has an intention to destroy us. But that doesn't mean that we understand the cancer in its entirety. We don't understand what caused it, and we definitely don't understand what's going to cure it. We don't necessarily know what's going to cure it. So we can look at what's happening now as essentially malevolent and anti-life and identify it or begin the identification that way. But that's only the beginning. If we jump right from this is bad and this is encroaching on my freedoms and they've gone too far now, to how we're going to resist it or what we're going to do about it, then chances are we'll end up doing the equivalent of chemotherapy. We'll end up relying on the same systems or the same beliefs or the same values to combat the thing that we're trying to get free of. And it's possible or likely, even in the case of chemotherapy, it's as far as what I read, it's 50-50. Basically, your chances are the same surviving cancer if you do chemotherapy as if you don't. And similarly, chemotherapy is only 50% successful because if it doesn't cure you, it will kill you. So it's really just a ruse of the state, really. I mean, they've suppressed all the real cures for cancer and all the natural treatments and so on, which all, well, I don't know about all of them, but I would say the best ones would be holistic and they would involve getting to the root of the problem. And so what's the root of the problem of this, you know, of this situation we're in now? Well, the root is so far back in history that we can't possibly locate it, which is why I always end up in the Garden of Eden. But the root is also in us. As I said, it was there in our conception. So we were conceived, or our conception was infiltrated by this force. So it's in us. And that's as a complementarity to that awareness, or at least allowing for that possibility. One is that if it's in us, what makes us think that we can combat the thing that we're trying to get free of? Because number one, it's in us, so we'll be getting triggered and driven and directed and manipulated by that internal colonizing force that to act in ways that are self-sabotaging and counterproductive. And number two, if that thing is in us, why would we need to confront it outside of us? Why not confront it inside us? Why not locate it inside us and have the showdown at an inner level? Satan is within you. Go meet him. Face him head on there, and the whole game can change.
Yeah.
stop my own thought process there because I had a whole bunch more to deliver, but I'm not sure what there is to add to that. I mean, the only problem is it has different meanings to different folks, strokes, folks, and nobody will know how literally I mean that and how much it's metaphorical. But somebody's going to say something. Go ahead.
Well, just something that came to mind. Could it be said that what you're talking about as the root, that the cause of all this is simply the human ego with its fears and its greed? Is it as simple as that, do you think? It's just about the ego. And when we talk about an apocalypse, a mass death, you know, maybe it's about dying to the ego and stepping into the bigger thing.
Well, yeah, although it's not either or, is it? And what's coming to me now is that the false identity, which isn't synonymous with the ego, because I do think we need an ego, and certainly we need a healthy ego to surrender. So there's unhealthy ego and there's healthy ego, and the false identity is a very unhealthy configuration of the ego, of self-awareness. But what I was going to say, that it's not just that the world as we see it and as we know it, or a satanic kingdom that's covertly controlled by entities that we don't even really have much of a point of reference for without going back to demonology or religious lore. It's not just that world is shaped by demented, tormented, distorted, deformed, traumatized egos inside human bodies, which I say is a kind of possession. And therefore it is the way it is. But the way that we see it also is influenced by that and the solutions that we try and come up with. So the bottom line for me is always this, well, what are we actually trying to rescue, or what are we trying to remedy? Because we're not going to survive death. We're not going to avoid death. And probably our death isn't going to be that pleasant. I mean, we might be in some sort of state of wholeness and peace and surrender and maybe even freedom from the false identity. We might be enlightened. So in that sense, it wouldn't matter whether it was pleasant or unpleasant, which is sort of the point I'm getting to. But in terms of the physical event, chances are, best case scenario, it's old age, you know, internal organs collapsing, possibly in some care home, having to wear a nappy, etc. You know, we'll be lucky if there's still care homes by the time we come of age, or unlucky. But anyway, you get my point. There isn't really a positive scenario for our death if we're looking at it through the lens of our identity. And because, you know, our culture identity is all about being young and good looking and lots of energy and lots of sex and, you know, fun. Old age doesn't factor in. There's no kind of good framing for old age, much less death, in this cultural mindset that we've been infected by. So yeah, number one, death, can't avoid it and can't make it somehow pretty. It's just going to be what it is. And then number two, well, and this is very different for those who have children, but what's the desired endpoint? Like, what is this better world that maybe Martin is envisioning? Like, or is it, can we even envision it? Because we don't even, I mean, even the Garden of Eden didn't last more than a day, and there were only two of them. So how do we envision a world of happy, shiny, bright, dancing, naked, enlightened humans living together in harmony? I don't think that we can. And if you can't envision something, how are you going to make the steps to creating it? It actually wasn't where I was trying to get to, but that's where I ended up to. What I was trying to get to, I think, was maybe all that's kind of a trick, just as fear of death is a trick. as if we could avoid death. And that, I mean, that's the serpent's promise, you know, eat of this fruit and you'll be as gods. Well, that's now the transhumanist promise, eat of this fruit, Mark Zuckerberg's fruit, and you'll live forever as your Facebook profile in the metaverse. So, false promise, fear of death that lures us into these false things, but also fear of, any kind of adverse conditions, I suppose. But anyway, I was trying to get to that maybe it's a trick that somehow we have to make the world a better place. I mean, all the bad guys are saying that, so surely that's got to be a clue.
You know, Jason, as I reflect on the period of time it took me to really wake up to the world as it really is, certainly it was an evolution, it was a process that began in 2002 and has just been a snowball rolling down a hill to this monster now at the bottom of the hill. But my life, in terms, as I look back on pre and post that event, the post 9/11, you know, waking out of my slumber, I have to say, you know, in every single kind of metric, in every sort of way I can evaluate it, it's a more authentic life. It's a more honest life. It's in many ways, it's been a more challenging life, but it's been a more rich and rewarding life. And I have to imagine that along with the pain and suffering that's going to come with the loss of our technological creature comforts, that's just bound to happen as they continue to take down this version of society right now. But nonetheless, if we look at it the right way, if we face it with all of our effort, there is opportunity to enrich our lives rather than to just look at it as pure loss. And how we do that, of course, is what we're kind of arguing over. And you certainly have an interesting attempt with what you're doing over there. But yet it can't work for everyone. You know, you can't fit all the saved into that little corner of the world there. So there has to be other alternatives as well. But I think that we have to recognize that, you know, the purpose of this existence isn't simply to be comfortable and to get to an old age home and rock on a porch, which I know you're trying to say as well in a different way. But for me, I'm thrilled that I stumbled into this, because I look around at some of my, you know, I recently some people from college found me again, and one of them became a cop, which made me shudder. And the other one became an accountant, and I met him for lunch, and he's obese and, you know, just had that sort of down look of a guy in his late 50s who just basically is giving up on life and is just kind of, you know, shuffling towards the end, doesn't know, you know, how that's going to go. And I didn't like what I saw, and I thought, wow, I could have been him if not for that gift of awakening to this whole thing and then challenging myself to face the beast, to face all these demons that are around us and to adjust accordingly. And so we can't forget that. You know, the qualitative aspect of this can be a gift, and it has been for me.
I concur, and I think it was occurring to me, I'm not quite sure why, but I think because Jeff was talking about, he's talking about the loss of technical comforts, technological comforts. And let's face it, it's going to be a lot more we're going to have to let go of than that. Well, in the end, we have to let go of everything. But in the interim, many people, and I suppose all of us soon, are going to have to let go of loved ones in unnatural ways. It's one thing if loved ones die of old age or even of cancer, or even in my case of drug addiction. I mean, that seems relatively benign compared to what's unfolding now. Seeing people actually being sucked into some malevolent combine harvester that just wants to grind them up and turn them into silicon parts. All of that goes beyond loss of comfort, clearly. I mean, or at least unless we're going to take, you know, loss of comfort to the deepest existential level, where we're potentially becoming deranged from despair and terror. Which is back to the facing the devil within scenario that I summed up a moment ago. But anyway, what occurred to me was is that just as Mark Zuckerberg is booting up his metaverse, having primed, I mean, the people, human populations being primed to gratefully enter therein, this may be a clue or a way for us to reflect upon what's already been done to us, that we've already been lured into a simulation, and I don't mean a computer kind. That belief was just a sort of way of lubing the tubes for the real simulation abduction thing, is if people start to believe they're already in a computer simulation, what's the big deal about going into one again, kind of thing. But I would say the simulation we're in is of a metaphysical variety, which has a psychological basis for it too, which the short version being that as we were so heavily traumatized, we got stuck at the time of trauma, and we're unconsciously just playing out the scenarios, the elements of that traumatic period of our lives at the back of our mind, like we're dreaming awake, and all of that's getting superimposed on our experiences. So we're not really able to land in the present and interact with what's happening directly or bodily, because we're trapped in this virtual realm of unconscious traumatic reenactment. That's the psychological version. The metaphysical version, I'll refer you to Rudolf Steiner or somebody else. I can't think of anyone good, actually. But I think you probably know some of the basics of that one. Point being that we might already be in a simulation, just not the computer generated kind. And in which case, I mean, the reason for mentioning it isn't how do we get out, although that, of course, is a valid question, that everything that's unfolding now can be approached, and this is a point I didn't finish earlier. I knew there was something. How do we check? What are our terms for engagement with the adversary? It can be approached in the spirit of a simulation or a waking dream, which is that it's rich with symbolic content, and that how we act within it, although it's significant and extremely relevant, it's all we've got really is our actions and our choices. It's not, the terms aren't what we think they are. They're not about survival of the body. They're about the integrity of consciousness. And survival of the body extends to everything, all physical comforts, all loved ones, all social system, all of the physical reality itself is secondary to spiritual reality, because physical reality is temporary. It comes and then it's gone. Spiritual reality is eternal. And yet there's some weird intersection whereby what we do while we're incarnate in this life, because it's all we have, affects the shape or the configuration of our consciousness on its return to eternity. So that's it. Once the game's over, the game's over, and our score remains the same. Not that one you think in terms of scoring, because that's a bad model, but just have to be simple here. So the way in which we engage with the adversary, it can be one of non-resistance, non-reaction, non-hostility, but as opportunity to martial arts, really. I mean, martial arts is a simple model. Like, the adversary is coming at you with all this force. You know the right moves, and you move in the right way. And whatever force that adversary that's coming at you is trying to direct at you, is what undoes them. And you just stepped out of the way in time, or maybe you grabbed him by his finger and broke his thumb. I mean, there might be some sort of engagement. So this might seem contradictory to what I'm saying. There's no way to face the state head on. Well, I agree with that. I mean, I second that or repeat that, but that's because the state's a physical apparatus, and if we try and engage with it directly, then we have to engage with it as physical beings. And as physical beings, well, what are you going to do, right? If you grew up on Rambo and Clint Eastwood movies, you might think there's actually some outcome besides being crushed mercilessly, but there isn't. So, but if we're looking at it in this more with more subtle eyes, a metaphysical dimension of control, then the head honcho Satan is, as somebody pointed out recently, in a certain sense, less than we are. That's what makes him Satan. Like the human soul was created in the image of God, even the human body was. So we have the edge over the adversary at that level. And knowing that edge, and we think of Jesus in the desert. See, I feel that this is what's going on now, essentially. And that wasn't a violent confrontation. All Jesus had to do was sit tight and say, no, no thanks. Again, thanks, but no thanks. Like three times, just had to stay firm and stay calm. And then it was over. I mean, he did get crucified after that, but that was the fulfillment of his mission, apparently. We can question that, but I'm going to take the more or less traditional theological view and the Steiner view that Christ's crucifixion, once he'd overcome the temptations of the devil, his ministry began in earnest. He had fully surrendered to the divine and become an instrument of the divine. And then his crucifixion, he didn't want it to happen. And he said, you know, if this cup can pass from my lips, please let it be. But if not, thy will be done. And then even on the cross, he had his moment of doubt. But then again, the Spirit came to the rescue and it is finished, it is done, the mission was completed. That's a better model than Rambo. That even as we inevitably are crucified by the state, in whatever shape or form, by the adversary, the Spirit is victorious. It's a trap for the adversary. It's a trick. All of this is God's trick to get the devil to show his hand. Well, it's kind of humanity, actually, and the devil, where this came up on the podcast yesterday, that all the demons, they know judgment day is coming, and they're trying to escape God's fire, and the only place they can hide is in human bodies. And so the human bodies that are letting them in, well, obviously they think there's something in it for them. Come unto me, you spirits, and make me powerful. Jeff Bezos came to mind there. But you don't have to be a conscious, you know, agent of the superculture making pacts with Satan to let that happen. Like any kind of relief, you know, alcohol, in my case, TV, that allows these cultural entities, or these enculturing entities, whatever they are, supercultural entities, access. There's something in it for our false identity, some sort of comfort, refuge, relief, but there's a lot more in it for the demons. Anyway, and as humans become hosts for those entities, well, it's not good for them come judgment day. So yeah, why are we here? Why do we get together? It's not to strategize a plan to resist, counteract, or even escape the New World Order. Because I hear what Jeff's saying. He's not going to come to Galicia, and he's not necessarily going to leave the US, although I would strongly suggest that, if there's any possibility of at least introducing the idea. I do think there are places where it's going to be a lot worse, and then the places where maybe it won't be so bad. But I also think that, you know, by the time Judgment Day comes, nowhere is going to be safe from the wrath of God. That's what Judgment Day is. So it doesn't matter if you found yourself a cave in Afghanistan, bad analogy, but anyway, if you found yourself a nice retreat in Galicia, completed the work of restoring my own energy field to its original purity, then I'm going to burn too. And it could be that somebody else who ends up in a Waco, Texas situation and all their kids get burned alive before their eyes, still they've managed to save their soul, which is more important, right? From the point of view of false identity, they're going to want to die peacefully in Galicia, even if they get tossed in the fire pit afterwards, because the false identity can't really see into eternity. But from the point of view of the soul, Yeah, it, there's no scenario in this material realm too horrible to be willing to go through for the preservation or the restoration of our original nature in the eyes of God and in eternity. It's very simple. Yeah? It's like, what's the difference between, you know, infinity and any other number? So, like Jeff, I don't really know what the procedure is. I know, on a day-to-day level, I've got all these jobs to do and I'm trying to overcome my inertia. But I would say that's true for all of you. It doesn't essentially matter that much what's on your table, you know, what the challenges are, as long as you're choosing carefully the ones to address and addressing them and dealing with them, you know, dealing with the law of matter and observing it and learning from it and being reformed by it and finding a way to relate to adversity that empowers you and liberates you rather than oppresses you and enslaves you. And that goes back to this original point, you know, is fighting the power, is that really going to empower anyone or liberate them? Or is it just a trick of the adversary to prevent us tapping into the real guidance system, which has a very different perception and relationship to evil? I would say that the internal guidance system doesn't perceive evil the way that the mind does. It can definitely perceive it as distortion and imbalance and as an obstacle and something that needs clearing out, but it wouldn't have a reactive judgment about it or a condemnatory impulse. Or might mention the righteous anger. Well, what's the saying? Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. I would say, if you're going to talk about righteous anger, then you are, well, in danger of hubris, because righteous anger is the kind that's reserved for angels. And I'm not saying that we're not angels. We may very well be. I remember my one-to-one with Jeff, the only one we had. I don't know if I said it, but at a certain point I thought, this guy's an angel in disguise, isn't he? I wonder if I should tell him. Because deep undercover, we forget where we came from and why we came here. And that's it. I'm going to probably split on that point, although people can stay after I go. That's really the meaning and the purpose of these get-togethers, and what we're doing is to remember who we are, why we're here, what we came for, and start living it. And yeah, you can do that on Zoom. It's not as rich and embodied, as Jeff said, as it would be in the flesh, but we've got to meditate the opportunities as they come. I just hope that people will, I mean, present company will continue to check in at these meetings. Maybe even, I don't know, if you want to stay on after I leave. I also hope, and I will say, that you will participate in what Dave's doing. It's going to be tricky for what Dave and I are doing, because I'm there all the time. I always come to Dave events, and he's closing the gates now to new people and free events, and it's going to become, he said, intensely interactive in the next few weeks. And certainly my experience is things are really stepping up there, and I'm really beginning to see what I just said, who I am, why I came here, what I have to do, etc. Things are coming clearer. So, I mean, Joe and Jeff, you've been at Dave events. It's definitely always going to be welcome at the affinity groups, but I do strongly encourage to attend the Dave event and just recheck in there. We didn't talk about the transmission, Jeff. Maybe we'll talk about that today, because just briefly, I know exactly what you're talking about. I didn't feel the transmission for years, and I can't Yeah, well, we'll talk about it tonight, maybe. But I would say it's not a deal breaker. And in fact, your awareness of it is, well, I mean, there are people who do feel the transmission all the time, and they're not particularly solid or reliable, and they drop out like flies. It doesn't count for much, actually. There's a kind of discernment, and in this case, a willingness to engage without those kind of experiences, which is evidence of a much deeper commitment. That's what I'm going to say about that now. So
I'm glad you understood where I was coming from with that. It wasn't meant to be a criticism per se, rather just an assessment of my own place in the whole thing. But I have to run. I'm sorry. I have to get to work, guys. I have to bail out before you sign off, Jason.
Okay. Well, I'm going to get back to it too, but same time tomorrow if anyone wants to check in tomorrow. And thanks, Martin, for the inspiration today.
Thanks, guys. Good to see you all.